And about 11 o'clock on the night of the 30th, I said to my husband, I think we need to actually think about these fires. Not that, you know, it was that immediate, but over the next couple of days, maybe we might want to sort things out. He thought that I was just panicking, and we went to bed at 11 o'clock. At 2:30 in the morning, we were woken with a knock at the front door by the Rural Fire Brigade telling us that we needed to go.
Welcome to Understory, this 27th of May 2020. I'm Elizabeth Poe. 6 months ago, Australia's bushfires were global news. It took a pandemic to wipe from our national imagination the immediacy and ferocity of these fires, replacing the pictures of Australian families huddling on beaches to escape the embers, or trapped in car jams trying to escape holiday fires, or standing in the ruins of a main street in a country town with a new stark truths of our relationship with nature, COVID-19, another disaster on a global scale. Yet for those who were involved in the summer that burned up and down the East Coast, the bushfires are, in a sense, not over. There are many still homeless. There are many still traumatised by what they've seen. Or they are family and friends in mourning, not just for the 33 who died directly, but also for the estimated 445 people who died from the smoke alone. While we plan for economic recovery, we do so in the wake of the health costs for the 2019-2020 fire season of $2 billion. The bushfire insurance claims nationally have been another $2.2 billion. So here we are, deep in a pandemic, yet still downwind from bushfires that destroyed 3,000 homes and more than 10 million hectares of bushland, leaving many questions smouldering in the burnt soil. For we are not looking at a one-off event. According to the Bureau of Meteorology's head of climate monitoring, Dr. Carl Bragana, who made a submission on Monday, 2 days ago, to the opening sessions of the Royal Commission into National Natural Disaster Arrangements, fire weather has changed. Since the Canberra fires of 2003, there are new skills, new strategies, new means needed to deal with the causes of disastrous fires. Alongside the new COVID-19 issues, there's much we need to learn from these fires, which means remembering the learnings from earlier fires and earlier royal commissions, which were made plainly and gave clear recommendations. Why did we not put all this into practice? And why did the Prime Minister ignore the definitive call for bushfire action, which came last April? The Royal Commission into National Natural Disaster Arrangements is hearing evidence from many experts, and it's already taken more than 1,700 submissions. Today on Understory, we are bringing an edited part of some community video evidence tendered to the Royal Commission on Monday. We meet Wiradjuri woman Professor Sue Townsend from Charles Sturt University, whose home in Tumbarumba, New South Wales, burned down last summer. The western edge of the snowy mountains where she lived was cool and damp, and she thought safe from the ravaging fires. But the old assumptions no longer hold. Sue Townsend's experience gives us a picture of the harm of bushfires, not just from the loss of property, but also the long aftermath, which is largely invisible to the media. In this interview, made for the Royal Commission on May the 11th, 2020, by Kess Dovey, Sue Townsend gives us the longer context of trauma as she recounts how she grew up as a welfare-dependent child experiencing homelessness, then vowing to live a stable life as an adult. Sue Townsend worked hard and studied hard, eventually earning a PhD, and in a good job, financially secure, approaching retirement age, she bought a place in the country. When she and her partner decided that they'd worked hard all their lives, they then planned to go away once a year on holidays. But summer is not a good time to leave your property. Not anymore.
I think this is going to take a long time to get over. It may even create some frictions within the community about the best ways to move forward, about what people have lost, who's lost more, how we move forward. And it was interesting sitting at the meeting of the commission a couple of months ago in town when people were saying, and I've heard other people in the local community say, if we were just allowed to graze our cattle in the national park, this would never happen. Whereas somebody like me, it's like, oh, no. Yes, we needed to look after the national parks better. We needed to look after the forests better. We need to look after our environment better. But increasing where the cattle can eat is not the answer. We have to actually manage our environment better. And so I think that as we start having these conversations about how we do that, I think in some ways it's going to cause some friction between certain areas within the community. I think at the moment people are more together as much as they can be, you know, given this virus isolating people. But there's a common sort of, we've got to heal, we've got to move forward, we've got to keep business in town, even though for me it's like, I've got to keep business in town, but I've got a limited amount of resources to buy what we need to rebuild, and town naturally is dearer, not the fall of the business owners, but the expenses that they have. Do I spend my money in town or do I spend my money outside of town? You know, that sort of creates friction too, not just for me, but, you know, well, if we all start running out of town, those businesses cease to operate. So we're sort of in that real push-pull sort of relationship with each other. So it is quite fragile, those relationships. There are some people who aren't rebuilding, who are leaving altogether, so we will lose part of our community as well. I think, in the future, things will heal, but I think over the next couple of years, it's going to be quite a fragile place emotionally and for relationships between people, and who did what, who stayed, who didn't stay. I think we're going to have to live through all of that stuff until we can come out the other side of it. I think once we come out the other side, there will be relationships that are broken that won't be able to be repaired, but I think as a whole and as a community we'll come out stronger.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of whether there's ongoing support for the community in the longer term?
No, I think it will go away. I think that support will just dwindle away. And I think this virus has lessened what is there, but I don't think it'll ramp back up afterwards, unfortunately. I think people, the community will have to find a way of working together to move forward.
Yeah. Is there anything else? We've covered many things, but is there anything else that you'd like the commissioners to know about what you think should be done better? Before fires, during fires, after fires, any of those periods?
Well, as I've already mentioned, I think the process for giving aid to people needs to be coordinated, and that people shouldn't have to jump through hoops at this time. But on a bigger scale, I do think we have to start taking seriously the climate change. And I know that's a dirty word for people. I know politically it's most probably the worst thing to bring up. But realistically, we know climate change is real. All the scientific evidence is there. Climate change is a real problem. And if we don't change the way we live, it's just going to get worse. We're at that point of almost being at no return. And I think this virus is caused by the way we live, the way we consume, the way we treat every other living thing on this planet. And if we don't pull ourselves up here and now, things are only going to get worse. So, yes, short term, we can't change the impact that we're currently having. These fires are going to happen. We need to prepare communities to not just say to the individual, well, that your bit of land there, that's your responsibility, but we need to, as a whole of society, actually say, well, what happens to you also happens to me. The impact is real for all of us. Let's look after what we've got. Let's help each other to look after that little bit that each other has. But then thinking about the bigger picture, we do have to change the way we operate and the way we live. This capitalist society doesn't work. It doesn't just not work for humans that are at the bottom of our pile, but it doesn't work for the environment either. And I'm someone who's worked my way up from being at the bottom of the pile, and now, yeah, it didn't save me from this. So working your way economically and being economically stable isn't the answer. There's got to be something else. And our communities, the Indigenous communities around the world, have always known what that is. Very simple things that we can start doing is thinking about the way we contain the undergrowth. We need to bring in Indigenous fire management. That's one very simple step at the very beginning. But we also need to think about the rest of the way we operate as a society. I think the positive side to the virus is it's shown us how quickly society operates when we reduce the amount of cars on the road, when we start doing other things. So we need to change the way we live. Now, I'm not a fool in thinking that people will go with that very quickly, or that it is something we can do very quickly, but the small steps that we can start with. And in Wiradjuri, we have this word, this phrase, yinnamara, which at its simplest forms means respect and honour, but it also means how we should live, which is to go gently and go slowly. And if we were to think about that as our way of living, think about the impact that we have on all else, then we can start really moving forward. And it's not just about us who are here now, it's about the generations to come after us. And I can't just think about myself, I've got to think about my grandchildren's grandchildren and what we're leaving them as well, if we don't blow it all up beforehand. And I think this year has really told us that we need to get our act together and to be serious about this. And yes, it will hurt, but I don't know that it will hurt any more than where we are now.
Yeah. Where do you think you'll be 5 years from now?
Hopefully the house will be well and truly finished in 5 years. I had thought that I'd be retired, but now I think I will still be working to pay off the rebuild. I think I will have changed a lot of stuff. You know, having had nothing as a kid, I've always, not wanted to buy secondhand clothes because it, always wore secondhand clothes. Having new sheets, having new bed, and now just going, no, hang on. No, that's the problem. That's part of the problem. So I think even though I'll still be working and working at universities, despite people thinking that academics and school teachers have lots of holidays, they don't. I think I'll still be working, but I think so many other ways I will slow down and, you know, put this lesson to good use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for helping us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to edited excerpts from Evidence to the Royal Commission into National Natural Disaster Arrangements, tendered by Professor Sue Townsend. The Royal Commission is learning that the bushfire season in much of southeast Australia now begins in August, 3 months earlier than in the 1950s. That means that the Royal Commission will be finalising its report and recommendations already well into the time that the new bushfires will start burning, whatever stage the pandemic may be in at that time. You've been listening to Understory. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Thanks to Adrienne Glamorgan for this story and to you for listening to RTRFM's weekly environment programme. You can hear and share us as a podcast or streamed online, and tune in again next week, same time, when there'll be plenty more to explore with Understory. Radio for the planet.